It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I very much hope you enjoy the show this morning, and welcome to 2020 again as we begin a new decade in the world of conservation and the outdoors and hunting and fishing and all the things that are going to happen in the coming 10 years. And if we look back at all the things that happened in the past 10 years, it would be pretty hard to imagine a lot of them. But one thing is certainly constant, and it's the drumbeat now on a continuous basis about what is going on around the world with our climate. And as you know, if you've listened to me for many years, 20 years now, in fact, this is the, I guess, the anniversary of my 20th year show. You know that I report on the climate issues without trying to have a bias one way or the other. I'm not a climate alarmist. At the same time, I'm not a climate denier. My feeling is, and it always has been, that the climate is changing, and it does appear as though it's changing more rapidly. There's just seems to be no question that that is not the case. So maybe 20 years ago, I was an individual who said there's a lot of talk about the climate, and a lot of people think it's changing. It's always been changing. Here we are 20 years later, and I could say there's a lot of talk, a lot more talk about the climate. The climate is changing, and it appears to definitely be changing faster than we might have thought a while ago. So with that as the background, there are a couple of things that have jumped out early in this year, which I think will dominate much of the year as we move into a presidential election year, obviously the Senate and the House. These are issues that are going to be driven, and they are going to affect how people vote, and they're going to affect how people think. And the first is there have now been a series of articles written about the Amazon and how the Amazon is, quote-unquote, at a tipping point. And I'll start off with the Amazon, not because it's the letter A in the alphabet, but because of its relevant to its relevance to us here in North America. South America has its own Amazon. The world is well aware of it. It's enormous. North America has its prairies, which to North America are very much the same as the Amazon is to South America. The irony is that most of us, looking at a map, couldn't identify really where the prairies are or what they do. So when we talk about the Amazon in South America, we in many ways have a reflection point here in North America about the prairies. The difference being, of course, the Amazon is a large river and lots of trees, and the prairies is a massive 100 million acre area of land that it was mostly grass and water, and which is mostly gone now. But coming to the Amazon, we are finding out that about 20% of the Amazon now has been deforested in Brazil, and about 17% of the Amazon overall. So basically, a fifth, if you will, of the Amazon has now been turned from rainforest to agricultural lands. What is happening in the Amazon is that as this is occurring, it is now believed, and they call it the tipping point, and there are scientists who say, I'm not sure we're there yet, but the consensus is things could radically change in the Amazon. And when that happens, just as happened on North America's prairies, it's bad news. First of all, the trees in the rainforest sequester enormous amounts of carbon, which is one of the things that keeps the Earth's temperatures down. As the trees are cut, the carbon sequestering is not able to take place. The second thing that's happening is that we are now noticing a change in the forest in the Amazon from trees that are what you would call rainforest trees, dependent on very, very high levels of rain, to trees that are less tolerant of rain and more tolerant of drier weather or savanna-type trees. So the Amazon, which has been under assault now for decades, does appear to be showing actually biological changes. fundamental biological changes. And as the Amazon produces less moisture, this is going to affect agriculture across South America. It's going to, in fact, affect carbon sequestration. And so the lungs, some people have referred to the Amazon as the lungs of the world. The lungs of the world, there's no doubting it now. The lungs of the world, if you will, are 20% roughly less, have less capacity than they did 50 years ago. That's a big number. And there does not appear to be a large-scale decrease in the amount of deforestation. And then if you run over in Indonesia, which of course is on the other side of the world, and you look what is happening to the Indonesian rainforest, which for some reason don't get the kind of attention that the Amazon is getting, yet they are absolutely critical, again, to the health of the world. The Indonesian rainforests are being burned down, cut down, and denuded and changed for the growth of palm oil, primarily, other oils as well in agriculture, but palm oil being the number one driver. So in our hemisphere here, not in our hemisphere, excuse me, in our North American, South American world, we have the Amazon, which is being badly deforested. And then you go to the other side of the world, and you've got Indonesia, which is being badly deforested. And you have to wonder, is there a connection between what's happening in Indonesia and the wildfires occurring in Australia? You can't probably draw a direct line, but there certainly is something going on. And again, as I come back to what I said for many times, I am not a climate alarmist. I'm not a climate denier. I am trying, as so many of us are, to sort all this out. But what I'm sort of saying is at the beginning of 2020, we are seeing an onslaught, and it's not organized. I don't think it's an orchestrated effort by the United Nations or something like that. I don't believe that. We are seeing across the world an awakening, an awareness. And it's not just with the Amazon. We're reading about now what's happening, obviously, and we have been what's happening with Greenland and the melting of the ice shields. And there just recently was a very big article about the Arctic and how the Arctic, which has been a carbon sequesterer for, I guess, as long as we know, is now maybe becoming a carbon emitter as the permafrost is declining. And there's no question, absolutely, it's irrefutable, that the warming at the Arctic is warmer than in other places of the globe. So while we may be sitting here in Chicago saying, well, you know, we just had a really cold week 2 weeks ago or whatever it was. What is this global warming? We've got a lot of snow. It's irrefutable that the Arctic is warming faster than the other areas of the planet. And the permafrost, which has been a sequesterer of carbon, let's say forever, is now beginning to be an emitter of carbon. Greenhouse gases, that's one of the things that contributes to the warming of the planet. So you have a number of scientists saying, you know, even if man was causing this, and that is, of course, one of the huge debates, did man cause this changing in climate? We're now seeing areas of the world where nature itself is now beginning to warm because of the release of greenhouse gases. So you have on one hand people saying we've got to change how we live and what we do. And now you have on the other many, many scientists saying, well, you could change everything you want to change. The Earth now is emitting on its own a lot more carbon than it ever did before. So the real question, I guess, we have going forward is, what are we going to do about this? The you're going to read on an ongoing basis about all these things taking place. And they are taking place. I guess, you know, science is science. You cannot refute what's taking place. 20% of the Amazon is gone. About 90% of the North American prairies are gone. Both of those huge sequesterers of carbon had a lot to do with our climate. Now the Arctic is warming up. Greenland's ice shields are melting at alarming rates. All those are factual. There's no question that's happening. The real question is, what are we going to do about it? Can we do anything about it? And what are the changes that are coming as a result? So I would expect with an election year here in 2020, there is going to be a daily deluge of reports about how the Earth is changing and how fast it's changing. And some of them will be absolutely accurate. A lot of them will not be accurate. But the constant, if you will, putting in front of the world's people, the climate is changing, is going to be something that we are going to see on an ongoing and more frequent basis. And the real challenge for all of us is how do we ferret out facts from fiction? How do we ferret out what we can do about it versus what we cannot do about it? But the one thing I'm absolutely certain of as I sit here talking to you this morning here early in January of 2020 is that there is something we can do about it in North America. We may not be able to force the Brazilians to stop cutting down the rainforest as much as they want, but we certainly here in North America, United States and Canada, we can stop the destruction of our prairies. An area of 100 million acres in size, absolutely enormous, going from Iowa, it's often called the gift of the glaciers, going from Iowa on up into the prairie, Canada, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, North Dakota, South Dakota, western Minnesota, eastern Montana, Iowa. That is what is left of what is known as the Great Prairie Pothole Region, the gift of the glaciers, and it's about 90% gone. We can save the 10%. So as we sift through everything around the world, maybe sometime we just ought to look at home here in North America and say, what are we doing? What are we doing to save our own, if you will, our own Amazon, the prairies of North America? I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the Great Outdoors. I hope you're enjoying the show. When I come back, I'm going to talk a bit about bird migrations and its ties into what's happening with climate and how birds adapt. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Every game, it's all on the line. Personal, one-on-one, head-to-head. You have to look for every advantage. Strength, speed, and power to win.
Dan Hampton knows when you're looking for a tough competitor, Chevy Silverado has every advantage. Silverado's Ecotec 3 V8 gets better mileage than Ford's F-150 EcoBoost V6. You heard it here. Plus, Silverado's trailering package delivers 12,500 pounds of towing capacity that guarantees hauling muscle. More power? Better performance. That's the kind of advantage that wins games. And there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix Lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy than you ever imagined for less money. Your Chevy dealer knows what it takes to be a winner.
Take it from number 99. Chevy Silverado is an all-star. See your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details. Kick off the season right. Go for it.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, the host here on WGN Radio. Hope you're enjoying the show. And as I mentioned, I was going to talk a little bit about birds. Here we are in January, and we appear to be in a relatively, it could change, of course, but we appear to be in a relatively mild cycle again throughout the heartland in the south. This winter is shaping up a lot like last winter, which means if you are in agriculture or you live anywhere in any near any river, you're going to begin to gnash your teeth again. It may not, hopefully, my goodness, it doesn't get as bad as it did last year, but we are right now appearing to be in a situation where we're looking at a rerun. Many rivers throughout the Mississippi alluvial plain are at flood stage and beyond. We've had a lot of rain. It's been relatively warm, and that impact on birds is seen by anyone who spends a lot of time outside. They scatter. Floodwaters are generally great habitat for birds because they have a lot of habitat to move around in, a lot of places to forage. The difference is this year, because of the extremely wet summer, there is not a lot of food available because so much land was underwater that it didn't produce the kind of foods that it normally would. The smart weeds and the millet and corn. So all kinds of small grains and larger grains that a lot of birds depend on, and deer, and other mammals for foraging are not there, and they're underwater again. But what I wanted to talk about a little bit is how migrations change, and it ties in with what I was talking about earlier in the show. Over the past 50 years, we have seen a complete change in the migratory habits of a number of birds. So if you think that, call 2 years in a bird's life a generation, we've had about 25 generations of evolution in, let's just take the world of Canada geese. They don't breed their first year, they breed their second year. So 25 years of evolution. 50 years ago, Canada geese were common in Louisiana. The best goose hunting to be had in all the world, Canada goose hunting, was down in Cairo, Illinois, and in the Chesapeake in Maryland, and then the sandbars of the Mississippi River, all the way down through Tennessee and Mississippi and Arkansas into Louisiana. Today, you could spend 365 days, and the only Canada goose you would see would be a local non-migratory Canada goose in many of those parts of the world. Cairo, Illinois, the great quota zone. It's called the quota zone because so many geese went there. Now, a Canada goose is a rare sighting. In fact, that entire region has moved from a Canada goose area to a duck area because of the way the birds have adapted. And mallards are no different than Canada geese. Louisiana used to be one of the major staging and wintering areas for mallards. The Louisiana coast, southwest Louisiana, was legendary for its mallard populations. And 50 years later, from the time we began surveys, we're down about 50% in the number of mallards that go to southwest Louisiana. Where are these birds going? A lot of them don't exist. But those that do exist are deciding southern Illinois is a great place to spend the winter. The boot heel of Missouri, great place to spend the winter. Northeast Arkansas, great place to spend the winter. They don't need to go that far south. Snow geese. The migration of snow geese went all the way down into Laguna Madre in Mexico, as did the white front geese, or otherwise known as speckle bellies. They went all the way south into Mexico. It doesn't happen anymore. Birds have evolved, and as the climate has changed, and as agricultural practices in the United States have changed, birds have really, really changed what they're doing. And so we are seeing a situation where when we talk about how climate change, if you will, is going to cause massive extinction, when we look at the precursor of what's happening with a lot of bird species, we're finding out they are pretty adaptable. And a generation, just call it 2 years for almost every bird. Some birds it's 1 year. A dove is more like 6 months. But these birds have wings and they can adapt. And they are adapting, provided their breeding grounds remain in place. The one thing that definitely is occurring is when the breeding grounds run into trouble, then the birds have a tough time adapting quick enough. But on the wintering grounds, they absolutely have proven to be able to adapt. And Canada geese now, which of course populate, you know, virtually every shopping mall and lawn and throughout the northern part of the Midwest, that didn't used to be the case. Snow geese, major wintering area for snow geese right now, is in Arkansas, northeast Arkansas, in the Missouri, Tennessee, north Mississippi, and they're now wintering in southern Illinois. As recently as 20 years ago, that was unheard of. Seeing snow geese in southern Illinois in January was a phenomenon. Now the phenomenon is there are 500,000 there. So birds adapt, and we should recognize that as we talk about all the changes that are occurring on the landscape, that birds do adapt. One thing, though, they don't adapt to, which I'll talk much more about in the coming months as we head into spring, is they don't adapt well to change in predator communities. That seems to be the one thing that when bird species face a changing predator community, they don't have the ability to adapt fast enough. I thank you very much for listening this morning. I hope you've enjoyed the show. This is Charlie Potter on The Great Outdoors, on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.